Growing the Game with Ballsy. He's brought to you by Pizza Huts in Saskatchewan and the Concord Group of Companies. Brought to you by Paul Waldo at Royal LePage, the home expert team. If you need a real estate agent in Regina and surrounding area, give Paul a call at 306-502-5355. Brought to you by Wheel Estate. Got a travel trailer you want to rent out or rent one this upcoming camping season? Check them out at wheelestate.ca, and their rentals are backed by a $1 million insurance policy. And I'd like to welcome a new sponsor, Riviere Ag Seeds in Radville, Saskatchewan. If you're looking for pedigree, durum, lentils, peas, or chickpeas this spring, give Paul a call at 306-869-7629 or check them out online at rivièreagseeds.ca. This is Growing the Game with Ballsy, a podcast dedicated to growing the sport of football in Saskatchewan. Now, here's Ballsy.
Well, Darian, how are you today, my friend?
I'm doing great. How about yourself?
Awesome. How's fatherhood? Is it rolling along quite well?
Rolling along, man. They always tell you, time flies, so enjoy every moment. And just seeing them grow so fast is definitely true. Time is just flying.
What's favorite part of it for you?
I think just watching that every little accomplishment that they make, from the rolling over to the first crawl, to the first word, the first steps when they walk, every little milestone, it just gives me joy just to be around and see it, because so many of my older teammates, they were away from their families when their kids were growing up. So to be there and actually witness every first milestone is just great.
I remember the first time I changed diapers, I'm like, how am I going to be able to do this? And, about 6 months in, I'm like, I'm pretty damn good at this. Are you like that?
Oh, yeah, man. Oh, no question. You become an expert, and I'm so competitive. I try to make my next pamper better than the previous one. So I challenge myself from time to time.
Somehow I knew you would. I can't believe back in the day my parents started with the diapers that you washed. Like, you didn't throw them away. You the cloth diapers.
Oh, wow.
I can't imagine that, man. But we were.
Don't tell me your age here, man.
Okay. I'll leave that alone. Okay, Double. So let's talk about. First of all, we didn't get a chance to hook up with you last week because of technical difficulties. Just your thoughts. Yeah. On first off, Kerry Joseph and what he meant to your career, because obviously you were there when he was with the Riders.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Kerry was just such a huge mentor for me. Honestly, I don't think that I would have been able to play early without Kerry. I mean, sitting in meetings with him, and I have to give Marcus Crandall a lot of credit too, and I understand this is Kerry's moment, but just the way those guys just took me under their wings and showed me the ropes, showed me how to be a professional, how to eat, how to take care of your body, and then most importantly, the X's and O's, learning a complete new game for me coming from the States. And, they just made my transition just smooth. So Kerry is a huge part of my success, my growth as a quarterback. He's even a part of my life to this day. So to see him, do something that's never been done, and that's get into the Plaza just playing 2 years, it says a lot about the man he is, what he was able to accomplish. And I'm just proud that he's able to get to this point in his career and to be a part of it myself.
I know Neil Hughes speaks highly of you. He was in the backfield for you for all those years. He was really a glue guy, but I want to take you back to the Grey Cup, November 24th, 2013, and you guys are running out the clock, and Neil Hughes is getting the football. And The only thing I wish is that Neil Hughes would have scored a touchdown. That would have been the perfect capper to that season.
I know. We've been wanting that for Neil all season long. I mean, pretty much my whole career with Neil, I've been wanting him to get an opportunity to get, 10, 15 carries a game, because he was special back, man. I mean, you don't see a lot of guys of his size being able to cut, being as nimble as they are, on his feet as he was. So I've always been a huge fan of Neil's. I've always wanted him to have success. And to see him, being from Saskatchewan and going into the Plaza, I'm so happy for him.
Okay, let's talk about the current Riders. How lucky are these Riders? It seems whenever they're lined up against a team, something happens to that team. Injuries, lightning, it cuts the game short, and now the Riders don't have to face Matt Nichols or Andrew Harris. How lucky are these guys?
Yeah. Just fortunate, sometimes in sports you're on the good side of some of those things. I mean, Saskatchewan has had its trouble over the years of having injuries, you know, unfortunate situations and circumstances throughout the season. So, you know, it's just very fortunate they're on the good side of things. They're playing great football right now. And now you have an opportunity to play the team that's number one in the division, and they're not coming in at full strength. You know, you have to be licking your chops. This is a perfect opportunity to make a statement and to, you know, show Winnipeg that, you know, you belong up top.
As the quarterback or as a quarterback, when you line up against guys like Charleston Hughes and Willie Jefferson, what's that like? You're human, so are you? Is that always in the back of your mind, or how do you block that out?
No, you have to always know where those guys are. Those are the game changers. Those are the guys you always have to account for on every single snap. You know, once the play starts, you have to kind of get in your rhythm and do what that play call, you know, asks of you. But you have to know where these guys are at all times. You can't hold on to the ball too long. And in Willie's case, you know, he's getting interceptions out there. So you have to know where he is dropping in coverage and making plays.
Yeah, for sure. Darian Durant joining us here for the doubles take. What do you make of Chris Streveler? What do you see from him? What don't you see from him? He looks pretty one-dimensional to me. I've said he's the Canadian version of Tim Tebow, but, you know, he can make some throws, so the Riders shouldn't sleep on him. That's for sure.
Not at all. I think the Riders, if you can just keep him in the pocket and make him become one-dimensional, make him throw the ball consistently, then – you know, they're in for a good day. You know, I was a fan of his as the season started last year. But it was just, you know, something about me being a quarterback, I always try to reserve my judgment until you see a big body of work. And I think what you're seeing from him is, you know, really doesn't trust his arm the way that he should. You know, he's had so much success running the ball. And I think when you get into the pros, you have to change your game. You have to be able to make some tight throws. You have to be able to sit in the pocket and deliver the ball to your guys, because you can't make a living out of running against professional athletes on defense. So I think he has an opportunity to be good if he can, you know, work on his throwing a little bit. But at this stage, he's relying on his running too much, and I think that's not a good thing.
Well, you were the guy that said, I want to see how Cody Fajardo performs against the Winnipegs, the Edmontons, the Calgarys, the Hamiltons of the world. So we get to see him against a Winnipeg team that will be relying on defense here in the Labor Day Classic. This is going to be a nice litmus test for Mr. Cody Fajardo.
No question. These are the games, you know, as Labor Day approaches, these are the games that count. These are the games where you make your mark. And he has the perfect opportunity, especially against a Winnipeg team that's down their two big guns on offense. He has the perfect opportunity to come out against one of the top defenses in the league and show that he belongs, and to show, you know, everyone who may question him, even myself, that he can produce against some of the better teams in the big-time atmospheres.
When you look at the Rough Rider offense, what do you think they need to do differently or better going forward? Like, you know, if they were to add something or change something up, what would you like to see offensively from this team?
Of course, I would like to see a little bit more creativity. I think that, you know, that they're getting away with just being more talented at the moment, and a lot of that has to do with the opponents that they've been playing. But now, you know, you're getting into the latter part of the season, I want to see a little bit more creativity. I also want to see Naaman Roosevelt get involved. He's your sure hand possession guy that can just keep the, you know, momentum going with drives, keep getting your first downs. I want to see him get involved a little bit more, but mainly just creativity. Now you're about to play teams back to back. You're about to, you know, get ready for the playoff run. So that vanilla style is something that you have to kind of switch up and catch teams off guard a little bit, because one play here or there is going to be the difference in these games.
I'm not saying you're wrong, but explain to me why it's different. You're not the only guy that says this. You mentioned it in this interview that you want to see now when the season starts for real, when they really start counting. Why is the season different starting this game? Why is it different?
Well, I think the first 8 to 10 games of the season is just really a feel out. It's finding out your identity, knowing who you are, learning your opponents. I think now that you have, you know, a whole bunch of games on film of your opponents, you know, now, you know, you really know and see what you're up against each and every week. And that doesn't come until maybe the leaves start falling a little bit. Teams see where they are in the standings, and, you know, they're jockeying for position a little bit more. So everything just heightens at this part of the year. teams, you know, they turn up the intensity a little bit. They're comfortable in what they're doing. So a lot changes in this time of the season.
You know, I liken it to this, and maybe I'm right, maybe I'm wrong because I never played United States football, but I liken it to this. You guys don't really start your football in terms of playing games till right now. Like, the college football season is just starting. And this Labor Day Classic really has that collegiate feel to it. Would I be right when I say that?
No question. I mean, you know, basically Labor Day is the turn of fall, and football is a fall sport, and you know, especially where I come from.
Yeah.
And you know, that's when, you know, the juices, the blood starts pumping, and all that good stuff gets going. So this is the time, and you know, it's right on time with the CFL. It's the first week of NFL season. It's, you know, coming up. It's Labor Day. It's the turn of football. This is football season around the world, and here we go.
You know, I never really talked to an American about this. That's an interesting point. Was that a bit of an adjustment for you to start for playing football, playing meaningful games where you get paychecks in the summer? You're like, man, this isn't supposed to start for 2 months.
I know. It's definitely an adjustment. I mean, you know, if you look at the guys from down south, June is, you know, summer workouts. You know, you're just getting ready for summer school, and you know, you're working out every day. It has nothing. You're not putting on any pads. You're not getting ready for combat or any of that stuff. So it definitely was a transition for me, and you know, I'm sure it is like that for a lot of the guys coming up from down south.
Do you have a favorite Labor Day memory off the top of your head, one that sticks out, or is it just the whole day in general?
I think I don't have a special moment for myself. I think watching Kerry you know, run that in on Labor Day was you know, one of the highlights of my career, even though I wasn't playing. But I just enjoy everything about it, especially, you know, the Saskatchewan-Winnipeg rivalry. You know, the very few Winnipeg fans that do get in the stands, they make a lot of noise. They make themselves heard. The atmosphere leading up to the game is absolutely phenomenal. I mean, everything about the Labor Day Classic and the Banjo Bowl, these 2 weeks, it's what playing Saskatchewan football is all about. These are the most exciting 2 weeks of the season.
Hey, let me ask you lastly, if you want to answer, fine. If you don't, fine. In hindsight, you retired, you were poised to become a Blue Bomber. Are you kind of happy you never experienced a Labor Day Classic from the other sideline in Winnipeg colors? You know what I mean? You stayed true to the green side?
I mean, looking back, yes. I mean, looking back, and now that I think about it, you know, being a rider for 11 years, I don't know how it would have been if I had on Winnipeg, if I put on the Winnipeg uniform. I don't know how, you know, I know everyone understands it's a business, and they know that players have to do what's best for themselves and their families. But I don't know if it would have made people look at me differently. I don't know.
Yeah.
So I'm just happy that everything worked out the way it did. My final football game in general was in Mosaic Stadium. So everything kind of came full circle and worked out for the best, in my opinion.
Well, it's not full circle yet. We got to see the other number four in the Plaza, and hopefully that's coming up soon. Yeah. We know it will be. Thanks for this, Darren. I appreciate it.
No problem, man. Always fun.
Growing the game with Ballsy. He's brought to you by Pizza Huts in Saskatchewan and the Concord Group of Companies. Brought to you by Paul Waldo at Royal LePage, the home expert team. If you need a real estate agent in Regina and surrounding area, give Paul a call at 306-502-5355. Brought to you by Wheel Estate. Got a travel trailer you want to rent out or rent one this upcoming camping season? Check them out at wheelestate.ca, and their rentals are backed by a $1 million insurance policy. And I'd like to welcome a new sponsor, Riviere Ag Seeds in Radville, Saskatchewan. If you're looking for pedigreed durum, lentils, peas, or chickpeas this spring, give Paul a call at 306-869-7629 or check them out online at rivierageseeds.ca. This is Growing the Game with Ballsy, a podcast dedicated to growing the sport of football in Saskatchewan. Now, here's Ballsy.
And our guest here in Growing the Game is Jim Hopson, Canadian Football Hall of Famer. We talked before you were going in, my friend. How does it feel to be a Hall of Famer now?
It doesn't feel a lot different, but I was sure a tremendous experience for myself and my family. I was quite frankly surprised at what a big deal it's been to so many people I've run into. And, it's just been It's been awesome. It's awesome.
Awesome. Okay, so let's talk about the two guys that went into the Plaza of Honor. I know you were front and center with those two gentlemen in their career. Kerry Joseph, let's start with him. Obviously, it's nice to see him get his just due back here in Rider Nation.
Kerry was so key to our victory in 2007. I mean, Kent gets a lot of credit, and he should, and there were many others, but Kerry, he really put the team on his back down the stretch, starting with Labor Day, when, you know, as we were in Labor Day, and just rose to new levels, I thought, as a quarterback and a leader. A great guy. I'm so happy for him. And, of course, Neil, I think of Neil as one of those backbone guys, you know, for longer than a decade. He was so important to the team, did whatever he needed to do on special teams, on offense. Just one of the guys that everybody counted on. And so it was great to see him going as well.
As a Saskatchewan guy yourself, when we think football players, we think the Makowskis, we think the Aldags, the Polies, the Reeds. I mean, I wouldn't put Neil Hughes in the Reed category, except when I'm thinking football player, because that's what Neil Hughes was. When you look up football player, he was a football player.
Exactly right. Whatever job they gave him, he did, and he did it well. He was tough. He could block. He could carry the football. He was a good pass catcher. He was great in the locker room. Extremely well-liked, a real leader. He was a football player. And always felt that if Neil would have been given more touches, he would have even had a greater career. But he was happy doing the things that he had to do to help the team win.
You know what's neat about Neil Hughes and Jim Hopson? You guys both spent your entire football life, so to speak, in Saskatchewan. Of course, you took it to another level running the football team. But you guys had your minor football here. You had your professional football here. And part of your minor football, you're joined at the hip, too, with the Tom Trojans. Just your thoughts on Tom not having a team this year. I'm an O'Neill Titan guy, McGuigan Mustang O'Neill Titan guy, so I hated the Tom Trojans. But I had a lot of respect for them. That's sad, man.
It is, and it caught me off guard when I found out yesterday or earlier this week, and it's sad. But having spent 30 years in education, I've seen similar things happen across the province. Had it happen in my school division, we lost our programs at Belgonia and Lumsden, but guess what? A few years later, they were back, and they're bigger and better than ever, provincial championships. So, you know, it has to do with demographics, it has to do with numbers, but, you know, you got to have leadership at the school level and in the community and interest. And, you know, it's not just football. I just think extracurricular is so important to good schools and developing good students. And so I hate to see those kind of things happen, but let's hope it's a hiatus and not the death knell for the Trojans.
You know, this segment is growing the game, but, you know, do you feel like that's a shot at football? Like, are you worried about the future of football when you see a storied football team, the Kings of Argyle at one point, the Tom Trojans, no longer exist, at least even for a year or two?
I'm not overly concerned there because I've seen it happen many times at six-man football, nine-man level, 12-man football. There are changing demographics and so on. I think if we saw a whole bunch more go, but we've seen, you know, other schools struggle to get enough numbers out. And heck, when I first started playing with the Trojans in 66, Lauren Schmier, he basically recruited me, and the numbers were low then, and they were trying to get the program going. So I wouldn't push the panic button. I would if it, tended to be a trend. But I think the interest is still there. I look at Regina minor football, Saskatoon minor football, provincial minor football. I think minor football is stronger in Saskatchewan, maybe anywhere other than maybe Quebec. I mean, it's really a great institution here in the province.
Jim, when you look back at Tom, though, and like you said, we're hoping that it comes back in a year or so. It's just a brief hiatus. You know, you got the Jerry Thompsons of the world, the Chuck Toffs, the Alex Smiths, who coached there for a long time, Kennedy Nikias and Neil Hughes, Jim Hopson, the list goes on and on. A lot of great names rolled through those hallways and that football field.
They really did, and you know, Brad Elberg is another one.
Yep.
And so on, but just with Jerry Thompson the other day and talking about some of the people and coaches like Jerry Orban and Blair Thompson and Sheldon Neild and, you know, Kerry Hinks, Ryan Seip, it's like a who's who of Regina football that went through here and were part of this program. So it's a big deal, and it literally touched hundreds and hundreds of kids, as you know, and I think enriched their lives.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, lastly, Jim, it is Labor Day weekend. What is your favorite Labor Day memory? There's got to be lots for you. I know you mentioned the Kerry Joseph one. If you had to think of one Labor Day memory, is it that one, or is there something else that sticks out in your mind?
That one really does come to mind because, you know, the game was so close and we were just trying to get ourselves in a field goal position, and he rushed for the touchdown. But we had another one where we won big, and my wife always says that was her favorite. She said, I hate close games. I love when we win big. And I forget the year, but we just ran over them. And so that's kind of a special memory, too. But, you know, Labor Day is so special, fan day. Before the game and just all the memories, the sellouts and the great games we had. We went on a great run there in terms of victories, too, and that was pretty special as well.
Too, I remember Bob Cameron's first game, I believe it would have been about 1980 here, or it was a 1980 game. I remember talking to him about this when he went to punt it, and it was so windy, his first punt was like minus 3 yards. It went the other way.
I remember that.
You remember that one? You remember that one?
Yeah, I do.
And then, of course, I think it was wasn't Rocky Butler a Labor Day game, too, where you beat the Winnipeg Blue Bombers? Who the hell's Rocky Butler, and you guys come up with a victory?
Rocky went out and had the game of his life, and his third-string quarterback, nobody knew who he was. Great kid, really great kid. And he had the game, you know, the game of his life, and we won. And that was kind of set the stage for many, many victories over the next decade, huh?
Yeah, Jim, how do we capture the excitement that is Labor Day? And I know it's a little different, and it's really the changing of the season, and all the football guys say this is when the real season starts, and I tend to agree, but how do we capture the excitement in the Calgary, Edmonton, Saskatchewan, Winnipeg, and Toronto Hamilton matchups? I know those are natural rivalries, but how do we get that kind of excitement to carry out through the whole year where we can get this thing back to, you know, really the 2007, 8, 9, that era of CFL football where it was cool to be a CFL fan. It's kind of, in my opinion, gone stagnant a bit right now.
That's a good observation in terms of being cool, because you're right. For a long time in the 90s and so on, we didn't have a lot of young fans, and we struggled, and then we started to catch fire, and the young fans bought in, and you started seeing CFL hats and rider jerseys in schools and so on. And so I think there's still a strong base in Saskatchewan. We have such great fans. And you know, we've had a great crowd last week, great crowd again for Labor Day. But in other places, for whatever reason, Calgary, you know, it's kind of discouraging when you see their crowds this year. They're okay, but they're not sold out, especially when Edmonton's in town. That's a natural rivalry. So is it saturation? You know, we've got hockey, we've got basketball, we've got baseball, and, you know, it just goes on and on. But at the end of the day, I do think there has to be a strong connection between the team and the players and the community. And some of that maybe has to come from getting the players to stay in our communities longer, be part of the community. You talk about Neil Hughes, his whole career was here. Mm-hmm. Ronnie Lancaster, most of his career here. George Reed, Weston Dressler. And I think it's really important that you have that bond, that the community embraces the guys and they stay here off-season, live here, become part of it. You know, and I can't criticize the CFL because I was part of negotiating some of the things that they live by today. But these one-year contracts, you know, you just get to know somebody and they're gone. And I think that's part of it is convincing the players and everyone that it's to everyone's advantage to put down roots, be part of a community. You know, the idea has been floated of maybe giving the Americans the opportunity to play as a Canadian after a certain number of years in the league and a certain number of years in one place. Maybe it's time to revisit those things and kind of get back to our roots in that regard.
You know, Jim, no disrespect against Chris Jones. He's a guy that has a winning resume and built this team, you know, from 6 wins to 10 wins to 12 wins and almost a berth in the Grey Cup. And he did bring talent in here, but he didn't have any roots in our community. He stayed in a hotel. I know Don Matthews did kind of the same thing through his career, and Jones was a disciple of Don Matthews. What I like about Craig Dickinson, what I like about Cody Fajardo, they seem to be of the people. Dickinson is a prairie guy, comes from Montana, very happy. happy to be the head coach of the Rough Riders, knows the community, seems to, you know, he's bought into the community. And Cody Fajardo, here's a guy that loves number 17, was going to switch his number to 17, and, you know, decided, you know what, these people have spent hard-earned money on number 7. I'm not going to switch the number up. I want those kind of people to be the face of my organization. How about you?
I agree with you. I know it's old school, but I think that's always been an important piece of who the Riders are. The going back to George and Ronnie and even before Glenn Dobbs and so on, living in the community, being part of the community, identifying with the players, I just think that's so important. And it's great to see Craig. And, of course, you know, it starts with Jeremy O'Day. He's been part of this community for a couple of decades, and he gets it. He understands it. And so I do think that's important, and I think it's one of the ways the CFL has to go is reconnecting the players and the teams to the communities by having them be there long-term and off-season and all the rest of it. That's who the CFL has always been that, and you could run into a Rider, you'd run into Ronnie Atchison downtown or, or George Reed or whatever, and you could have a conversation, sit and talk to them at the Grey Cup and so on. And I know that's not the NFL, that's not the way the corporate world has gone, but that's who we are, and I think that's who we need to be.
That's Jim Hopson, a guy that led this football team through one of their most prosperous times as the face of it, and for that he's been inducted into the Canadian Football Hall of Fame, and a proud Tom Trojan, too. Thanks for this, Jim.
Thank you very much.
Well, before we wrap up episode 91 of Growing the Game with Ballsy, we have to talk about week one action in the CanWest Conference. We're going to be joined on the phone by Dave Thomas, voice of the U of S Huskies, as we talk about their 43-19 season opening loss at IG Field in Winnipeg, a surprising outcome, I think, to many, but we need to talk about our University of Regina Rams as well. Josh Donnelly, his era at quarterback for the boys in the Horns, officially begins week one in UBC on Saturday. Now, he'll make his second career start, actually, on Saturday. He redshirted last year, but was called upon to make his first career start in the team's Week 7 game in Cowtown. He completed a 36-yard pass to Ryan Shinbein on his first ever play of his career and finished that game 20 of 33 for 243 yards passing. Of course, Atlee Simon no longer with the team, and Kyle Borsa, probably their best offensive weapon, has been suspended for this year. So they'll do running back by committee with the likes of Trey Campbell and Semba Mesela, the former Lobolis Golden Sun, getting the bulk of the carries. On the line, the right side of the line remains intact as stalwart guard Andrew Becker and steady tackle Theron Churchill both return. Maguire Abel, Jesse Enns, Liam Jensen have all served as quality backup players, depth players for the Rams, but now they have to step up into starting roles. In the receiving core, though, this group will be the most dynamic, maybe. They've got Ryan Shinbein, who's already sixth in school history in receiving yards with 2016, need just 36 more to surpass Jordan Cisco and 154 more to overtake Jason Claremont on that list. Also returning this year, slot backs Kyle Mortgat and Bennett Stusik in his second year, and wide receiver Daniel Scraper with Riley Borsma expected to step up as the other wideout. So a little bit of new look on the offensive side of things for the Rams. Turnover in the D-line, too. Well, the Rams have mostly looked to develop from within the program to replace their graduating players. The D-line is a notable exception. Four of the six linemen that are expected to dress for Saturday's game are new to the program, including Cameron Cross from the Langley Rams, Garth Nittig from the Saskatoon Hilltops, and Brandon McKimmon from the University of Saskatchewan, and Braden Walsh from Bishop O'Byrne High School. Eric Wachowski and Matt Moore are the only two returners that will suit up. They've got new looks at linebacker, too. Sam linebacker Robbie Lowes is the only returning starting linebacker, as Cole Benkick, Lane Hall, and Danny Nesbitt all graduated. The Rams, again, rely heavily on internal development here, with Josh White, standout from Campbell to start at Will, look really good in the preseason, and Ryder Varga at Mac, Travis Semenuk at the Zach linebacker spot. And a new backup quarterback for the Rams, too. In his first year with the Rams out of Bishop O'Byrne program in Calgary, rookie quarterback Bryden O'Flaherty had a strong training camp, and he's the backup quarterback. And you want to speak about turnover. A total of 11 Rams are expected to dress for their first conference games on Saturday. Three of them are straight out of high school, O'Flaherty and Walsh, both out of Calgary. Linebacker Cameron Ma out of Notre Dame Regional Secondary School will make his debut in his hometown of Vancouver. and the University of Regina Rams, going into their 21st year at the U Sports level, have only opened up their schedule on the road 6 times, and this is the first ever time they've done it at UBC. Good luck to Steve Bryce and the University of Regina Rams trying to get off the schneid with what many would think would be a surprising road victory. They were picked as the last place team by many coaches in the coaches' poll. All right, Growing the Game rolls along, and live from IG Field, we're joined by the voice of the U of S Huskies, Dave Thomas, on CJWW. How are you today, Dave?
Well, it's getting ready for a long bus drive home.
Yeah, no kidding. It's always longer when you lose. How surprised are you by this 43-19 outcome?
I'm surprised in a way, but I'm not surprised in a way. I'm surprised at the disparity, and I'm a little bit surprised at the number of yards the Huskies allowed on the ground. But saying that, you know, the Huskies didn't have a preseason game this year. It's the second year in a row that they've done that. So, you know, I'm going to give them a little bit of a pass, because in the second half, they're absolutely right with toe-to-toe with the Manitoba Bisons. It's just that second quarter when they were outscored 20-6 that got away from them a little.
Yeah, let's be honest, Dave. They had 7 turnovers. They had a fumble in the end zone, and they also had an interception in the end zone. So there's 14 points right there, and it's a different ballgame.
Absolutely, and that's what it came down to. Then a mistake on a kick return that ends up in a fumble. And I think that Mason Dias really, really was pushing hard to do good things. And I think that by him pushing that button a little bit maybe too far, that it ended up in some bad positions. I'm not going to hang the loss on him. It was a team effort. If a team could have stopped the run in the first quarter, or Macho Bosher doesn't score 3 touchdowns through the air for Manitoba, it's a different story too. But the turnovers are the easy thing to point to, and the best part is they're correctable.
Yeah, you know, and Mason Nias did put the ball in some pretty good spots. He made some pro throws there. So, like you said, I think it's a, you know, first ever start jitters. And the guy comes in with a lot of expectations. I'm one of them pumping his tires. He comes in there, the whole city of Saskatoon, all you heard was the Nias era. So, I mean, young kid, and you can expect a couple of mistakes. And like you said, no preseason either. And didn't really get any reps in the green and white game.
No, he didn't get a whole lot. I think he was in for 3 series, maybe 12 plays. But, again, the Huskies know what they have with them, and they're very, very confident. And that doesn't waver with what happened here tonight. And I think the future is still really, really bright. Sam Baker, when he comes back to the receiving core, is going to be a huge plus for him. Y'all Piak, I thought, was terrific. So a lot of pluses from the effort here tonight, just not the plus in the win column that they wanted.
How bad is Mackert hurt?
You know what? I thought it was a cramp. I haven't seen him here tonight, so I'll have to do another assessment after. But Josh Iwanchina also came in and ran the ball really, really well. So how do you not give it to him? He ran for over 1,000 yards at the Hilltop last year in the regular season, and he never played a second half.
Yeah, no kidding. Hey, absolutely. And I'll tell you what, on defense, Nick Daly, we know him here in Regina. He's a wrecking ball. And welcome back to the Can West, Nick Daly.
Absolutely. And you know what? He should buy some real estate in the backfield, because he's there all the time anyways.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And another big blow here, Regina boy, Campbell kid, Josh Haggerty, looked like he went out with a knee injury. Don't know the severity of it, but he never came back. That'd be a big blow. And you guys took a bit of a beating on the offensive line with a couple of injuries too.
Yeah, absolutely. They were down to number 6 and number 7 on the old line. Hopefully nothing too serious there, but we'll have to wait and find out when we get back this afternoon, because that was going to be the big thing. The big key was having 5 offensive linemen return, and when they weren't able to get and go the full 60 minutes, that was a concern. But after halftime, I thought the O-line really turned it around, opening up some holes in the running game that they desperately needed in the opening half.
Dave, just a couple more seconds. I know you got to get on the bus for a long ride home. Manitoba, let's speak about them for a second. Des Cattelier, one of 2 returning quarterbacks in this conference. He threw a couple of beautiful balls. Of course, him and Mason Nias are good buddies, so you know that was a game inside the game. And they're trying to replace Jamal Lyles at the running back spot, and they seem to have done it with a 3-headed monster. That's a big play team. They got some playmakers on that side.
Absolutely, they do, and you got to give them full credit, because the Manitoba Bison's offensive line was a patchwork offensive line at the very best, and the fact that they had a 5th year go down during camp with a concussion that's going to end his career, unfortunately, and they really only had 2 returners, but they did very, very well on that offensive line, for sure.
All right, Dave, thanks for this. I know it's going to be a long night. Listen to your call. It was real good, and we appreciate you taking time out of the broadcast booth before you hop on the bus. Safe trip, okay, my friend?
Thanks, Baldy.
That was another installment of Growing the Game with Ballsy. If you have a story idea you'd like Michael Ball to pursue, please email him at mball@harvardbroadcasting.com.